Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod. They come at night. I'm Jason Horton.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town.
On a dark night in December 1942, a Soviet pilot was airborne in a daze, unsure of what direction they were flying or even if they were still alive. Anti-aircraft guns had blown away the bottom of their cockpit, and blood from their wounds dripped down their legs, which were dangling numbly over open space. But the pilot knew they just had to move, the unforgiving German searchlights trying to finish their deadly job. In the distance, they saw the regiment's runway and desperately moved the bottomless plane to the small, glittering beacon. After a rough landing, the pilot walked into the Soviet camp and hours later sat on a bench and waited their turn for surgery. Within months, the pilot, Colonel Maria Raskova, was back in the cockpit, out again on the front lines of the Soviet 558th Air Regiment, a deadly, all-women squadron of Soviet bombers during World War II. Facing off not only against the enemy but sexism by their male counterparts, the squadron flew flimsy wooden planes with ill-fitting uniforms and no parachutes, gliding quietly under the cover of darkness into German camps to attack. The Nazis were at first amused by the women, and then terrified, dubbing them the Nachthexen, or Night Witches, and offering up grandiose awards and honors to soldiers who could shoot these silent killers down. Today, we're talking about the women of the Soviet 588th Air Regiment, also known as the Nachthexen, or Night Witches. From the start of World War I, Russian women were looking for ways to contribute to the war effort in an active and profound way. Now, I know we've come, it seems like, a long way from where we're at in World War II. I want to give you a short mini history lesson. In World War II, despite having vastly different political aims or war strategies, they were the three great Allied powers, Great Britain, the United States, and later the Soviet Union, led by, of course, Winston Churchill, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and Joseph Stalin. Although the representatives met frequently during the war, Roosevelt, Stalin, and Churchill only met twice in person. But they were, at that point, united in defeating the Axis powers, who were, of course, Germany, Italy, and Japan. The Soviet Union didn't like the idea of women fighting in World War II, but Adolf Hitler had launched Operation Barbarossa, a massive invasion of the Soviet Union in June 1941. By autumn, the Germans were closing in on Moscow, Leningrad was under siege, and the Soviet armies were desperate and struggling. At that point, too, Soviet women outpaced American women in terms of work experience amidst the predominantly male economy. This is because in the 1920s, when the Soviet Union sought to expand and modernize, women flooded the workforce. Many were even hired by various aviation bureaus to build and fly airplanes. It's against this backdrop that women aviators showed up to war recruitment centers alongside men wanting to fight. But despite their role in rebuilding Eastern Europe, they were all turned away. The military would still not accept women in combat roles. In their frustration, Soviet women aviators wrote letters to their national hero pleading to fight. A famed pilot and navigator by the name of Marina Raskova. Called the Russian Amelia Earhart, Marina Raskova's destiny was not always to be an aviation icon. Born to musicians, Raskova was an aspiring musician herself and opera singer, but as a student she fell victim to an ear infection that left her unable to continue singing. So she pivoted, studying chemistry and engineering, which eventually landed her a job in the aeronavigation laboratory of the Air Force Academy as a draftswoman. There she learned to be a pilot and quickly climbed the ranks to be the first woman in the Soviet Union to achieve the diploma of professional air navigator. In the 1930s, Raskova had already established several world records in long-distance and nonstop flights, and was beloved by the women and men of the Soviet Union. So when women aviators kept being turned away from their recruitment centers, they turned to their hero, Raskova, and wrote Raskova dozens of letters, asking how they could best serve their country using their flight skills. It was at this point that Raskova had an idea. Sympathizing with the plight of these budding aviators, she demanded a meeting with Joseph Stalin himself, who also happened to be a big fan of hers. Raskova made a case to Stalin that women pilots would be of value to the Soviet cause. Stalin, maybe a little starstruck, maybe a little desperate, quickly approved. He, for the record, had a general interest in women's, quote, tremendous international propaganda value. And of course, again, he was desperate. In October 1941, women were formally allowed to enlist in the military, and 28-year-old Major Marina Raskova was made colonel of the informal 122nd Composite Air Group. Around 400 women, ranging in age from 17 to 25, were selected for the 122nd and moved to Engels, where they began training at the Engels School of Aviation. In addition to having to learn years' worth of training and information in a few short months, they also had to, of course, deal with the misogyny from their male counterparts. After this training period, Raskova then selected candidates from the enlisted women for three tiers of her air group, sorted by ability: the 586th Fighter Aviation Regiment, the 587 Bomber Aviation Regiment, and the 588 Night Bomber Aviation Regiment. The 586 Fighter Aviation Regiment was grouped for the best aviators, who became fighter pilots alongside men, and were each issued brand new Yakovlev Yak-1 fighter planes. The middle tier pilots were also assigned among men in the 587th Bomber Aviation Regiment. The lowest scoring pilots were assigned to fly night bombers in the all-women 588th Night Bomber Aviation Regiment. This Bad News Bears-style aviation crew were assigned to the planes nobody wanted to fly: the Polikarpov PO-2, a 1928 trainer plane constructed from, wait for it, plywood and canvas. These planes were crop dusters from the 1920s and typically only used for training purposes. They had no heat, an open cockpit, and a 100-horsepower engine. For reference, it's my understanding that a 100-horsepower engine is barely enough to power a basic, no-frills car. Sounds like a recipe for success, right? More than the 586th and 587th, the inexperienced women of the 588th were seen to be extra less than, not taken seriously, or of course provided proper equipment. These pilots were also given ill-fitted male uniforms and oversized boots, which they would have to stuff with their own torn-up bedding to ensure an adequate fit. They also weren't able to equip their planes with things like, oh, I don't know, parachutes, due to a lack of funds and strict weight limits for the outdated aircrafts that they were provided. Not just that, the pilots also lacked other, quote, luxury items their male counterparts definitely enjoyed, including radars, guns and radios, and navigation systems. They were forced to use more rudimentary tools, stopwatches, flashlights, pencils, maps, and compasses to get around in their planes. The two-person Polikarpov PO-2 biplanes were said to be, quote, like a coffin with wings. And, of course, incredibly unsafe if used in combat. And, well, that's exactly what they were going to be used for. But who would command the 588th, an all-women regiment with broke-ass planes and inexperienced pilots? For that task, Raskova chose 28-year-old Yevdokia Bershinskaya, I hope I'm saying that right, a highly skilled pilot with 10 years of experience under her belt. Afraid but focused, Bershinskaya imparted the women of the 588th with pride and a daunting but simple mission: fly low over German front lines and drop bombs during the night, disrupting the Germans as much as possible, maybe causing their forces to lose sleep, killing or injuring a few in the process. At least that was the goal. Bershinskaya thought that if they could be successful at just that, then it was all worth it. So here's how it would go. The 588th Regiment slept during the day, and as the sky darkened, they were briefed about their nightly mission, taxied out to the makeshift runway, and waited for nightfall. Then they'd take off in the dark of night towards the German front lines at a very low altitude, think over the tops of trees, and the navigator would drop the planes two bombs below. Then the crew would head back towards a torchlit runway and do it all again, sometimes even again that very same night. On June 2, 1942, the regiment flew its first mission over the Iver crossings on the Mayas-Severny-Donets and Don rivers, as well as roads in the Sal Steppes and Stavropol suburbs of Germany, the first of 10 major battles and thousands of missions. Night Witches often flew multiple missions a night, like I said, prolonging the attacks as long as possible to deprive the Germans of sleep. And it worked. The incessant attacks messed with the Germans' fighting and strategy. But disrupting Nazi sleep was just the beginning. As you might imagine, Night Witches would be far more deadly than anyone would have ever thought. More after the break.
Hi, hello, how are you?
Hello.
How are you doing?
How's it going?
We are checking in.
This is the check-in.
This is it.
I'm going to take a little sip while we check in.
Okay. Oh, a little sipping break.
The sip is complete.
You take a sip, I'll stay dehydrated.
Yeah.
For the people.
That's just what we are. It's like good cop, bad cop.
Yeah.
Dehydrated.
Hydrated.
Hydrated. This isn't even water. It's tea.
Ooh.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
We want to say hello to anyone who's listening, supporting us, spreading the good word of Ghost Town. Thank you so, so, so much. And we're talking military. Now we're talking government.
Oh, yeah. Ooh. It's a seamless transition.
We are right in there. The mayors. Reporting for duty. Sergeant Major of Snacks. Very important.
Oh, attention.
Sergeant Major Ashley Mattson.
Hello.
At your service.
At your service. I salute you. I'll say that.
And we have Major Private, you know, I don't know the terms, but I'm going to say Major Private because it sounds good.
Yeah.
Of plans making. That's fun.
Nice.
Everyone loves a plans maker.
I salute you.
Sergeant Private.
I hope no one that's listening is active military.
Private, Senior Private, Cat Jozel.
I salute you. Everyone's a private in your army, I guess.
And then we have, Major Admiral Private.
Oh.
Of music, playing DJ. It's General Major Private Kelly Meehan.
I salute you, Kelly.
Then we have Corporal Major Private of Decorations, Sergeant Major Double Private Casey Weber.
I salute you, Casey Weber. Double Private? Double Major. I double majored.
I only have like a double major in school, right?
Yeah.
And then we have Admiral Major Private.
You know, three titles.
Three stars.
It's like Taco Bell, like food items.
Yeah.
You just resort them in the way that
different names.
Well, yeah.
And this Admiral Double Major Private is in charge of emceeing, keeping the hype up. This is Double Major Private Matthew Clemens Leray.
I salute you.
Then we have Corporal Major Private. Four stars.
Four stars.
Was five, lost one. Don't want to talk about why or how.
That's fair.
In charge of propaganda, a.k.a. advertising, the parties.
Sexier, though. Yeah. Sexier than snacks,
Propaganda is a cool word.
Uh-huh.
That's Double Admiral Major Private. Was five stars, now four stars, Marissa Rothermel.
I salute you.
And then we have our governor. Winston Churchill? Yeah, freaking right.
Yeah, right. Who's this amateur?
FDR? See ya.
Get the fuck out of here.
Pol Pot? Loser. I mean, yeah, but... But yeah.
But yeah.
But yeah. Richard Milhouse Nixon? I don't think so. Mm-mm. These names are nothing. They're nothing names to the true leaders. All these titles, all these people... have all crawled so this person can walk on their freaking heads.
Their boots and their steel-toed
boots. Just stepping on heads.
Yeah.
Using their heads as carpets. That would be supreme leader. We're getting a little dictatory right now.
Does she want this? I don't know. What leader is she going to be?
Yeah.
You know?
Benevolent, firm, but firm.
Firm. She runs a tight ship.
Our benevolent dictator,
Avian Noble.
If you want no ads, no chit-chat bonus episodes, just the good stuff. No propaganda, but all propaganda.
Yeah.
7 days free. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod. You want to get back to some actual legitimate history?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's go back to World War II. The 558th Regiment was doing their best to mess with Nazi strategy, using their flimsy planes and two bombs per mission, MO, to tear some shit up. But soon, learning that the pilots were women, the Nazis began to form a counterattack against the regiment. So aviators revised their approach. The regiment sent three planes to a mark, using the first two to draw attention and enemy fire, while the third slowly ascended while turning, climbing in a wide circle until coming to a point designated by the navigator. Then the navigator would tap the pilot on the shoulder as a signal to turn off the engine, at which point the third plane would literally cut the engine and glide silently into the area of the German camp airspace, quickly dropping bombs from their balsa wood plane and, at the last minute, starting the engine again, hoping it would work, and flying out of there. This risky strategy was generally successful, but in the case that the engine failed or they were brought down, the pilots were armed with pistols. The last bullet, always for themselves. Literally one of the only things these PO2 biplanes had going for them was the fact that, due to their slower top speed, they were able to maneuver faster than German planes, making it harder to get a target on them. And so, every night, the groups of three would fly in, distract, glide, drop some bombs, and head out. They became more and more dangerous and more of a threat, so much so that the Nazis started calling them the Nachthexen, or Night Witches, inspired, of course, by their gender, but also due to the noise that the third planes would make when they would glide in. The noise was thought to resemble the sounds of brooms sweeping. The Germans had two theories about why the Night Witches were so successful and deadly. They were all criminals who were masters at stealing and had been sent to the front lines as punishment, or they had been given special injections that allowed them to see in the night. The pilots wore their name and reputation with pride, despite the danger and ridicule they faced back in the Soviet military. This is probably due to the first of their 12 commandments, a kind of mantra for the battalions. The first commandment was, quote, "Be proud, you are a woman." In their downtime, the heroic flyers still did things that were traditionally women's work. Needlework, patchwork, decorating their planes, and dancing. Throughout the course of the war, the regiment accumulated approximately 23,672 coordinated attacks in combat. Most notably, the 2,920 attacks at the Battle of the Caucasus, but also 4,623 attacks in Kuban, Taman, and Novorossiysk. Hopefully I'm saying those right. 6,140 attacks in the Crimean Offensive, and 5,421 attacks in the Poland Offensive. In total, the regiment collectively accumulated 28,600 light hours, dropping over 3,000 tons of bombs and destroying 17 river crossings, 9 railways, 2 railway stations, 26 warehouses, 12 fuel depots, 176 armored cars, 86 firing points, and 11 searchlights. We don't know how many people they killed specifically. We don't have those numbers from the Nazi military. But I have to say, the Night Witches did not just destroy things. The unit additionally performed 155 supply drops of food and ammunition to Soviet forces. It's not certain how many women pilots were lost on the Soviet side during the war. One estimate puts the fraction as high as one-third. As for the 588th, among its 200 fellow members, it's thought that 30 pilots died or were lost in combat. Now 30 years old, Colonel Maria Raskova would have a similar fate, dying on January 4, 1943, when she was finally sent to the front lines attempting to make a forced landing on the Volga Bank. Raskova, among her entire crew, perished in the attempted landing. Canonized in Soviet history, she was given the very first state funeral of World War II, and her ashes are buried in the Kremlin. The Night Witches' last flight took place on May 4, 1945, when the Witches flew 37 miles off of Berlin. 3 days later, Germany officially surrendered. By the end of the war, the bravery of these women pilots would be undeniable. Over 200,000 women were awarded medals for bravery during service in World War II, and 89 earned the highest honor, Hero of the Soviet Union. Out of these 89 women throughout the whole war and in every vocation and role, a whopping 23 were Night Witches of the 588th Night Bomber Aviation Regiment. Two Night Witches were eventually declared Heroes of Russia, and one was awarded title Hero of Kazakhstan. Despite being the most decorated unit in the Soviet Air Force at the time, the Night Witches Regiment was disbanded 6 months after the end of World War II. And when it came to a big Victory Day parade in Moscow, they weren't included, because it was decided their planes were too slow. Commander Yevdoika Bershins did survive World War II and continued on in the military until her retirement. In 1975, she was awarded the title of Honorary Citizen of Krasnodar. She lived in Moscow, where she died of a heart attack in 1982 at the age of 69. I had no idea about the Night Witches until very recently, and found their story to be both distressing and impressive, a fascinating illustration of how these very young women aviators would do whatever they could for their country, including piloting plywood planes with no parachutes, navigating with school compasses, and in men's boots. Such is the long and dangerous night of a Soviet Union Nachthexen.